You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at wicn.org. I'm Al Voner, and this is The Public Eye. Nice to have you with us this evening. A major topic across the country since the outbreak of COVID has been the lack of help. Many companies struggling, especially small businesses from East Coast to the West Coast, looking for help. Trying to find people to fill roles so they can keep their business viable, which is really the backbone of the economy of this country. Many, though, are starting to look at an untapped or somewhat of an untapped market, and that being people who've had criminal backgrounds but have chosen to now turn their life around and in many cases have turned out to be exemplary in terms of employees. And for the next half hour, we'll be talking with national commentator and author Jeff Krasenik. His new book is Untapped Talent. And Jeff knows a thing or two about utilizing the talents of people who have had what may be considered a rather shrouded background. Jeff, nice to have you with us.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
If you and I were to enter a room of perhaps strangers and wanted to, talk about this, I'm sure initially we would see a lot of eyebrows raised and people saying, are you kidding me? You want to hire someone that, has had a criminal background, someone that, like the rest of us, we've had to toe the line. Why haven't they? So first and foremost, what I'm getting at is, let me ask you, is there a stigma attached to almost anybody that's had any kind of a criminal history?
There's an enormous stigma, and it falls into a couple of categories. One, I think people, when they hear the term, say, felon or felony conviction, they tend to think of the worst possible crime, axe murderer or whatever. And then there's also this belief or fear that people with criminal convictions just can't be very good at doing an honest job. And so the two of those combined tend to be a very large barrier to getting this done.
Now you've got a strong banking background, and you feel very strongly about utilizing the talents. But beyond that, I guess you've had to do some soul searching and have come to the conclusion that everybody, deserves a second chance. And like you said, we're not talking about an axe murderer here. We're not talking about someone who's been convicted of terrorism. Somebody who maybe had a misdemeanor, or somebody that's just, on the wrong side of the fence, as they say, but has made great effort to turn themselves around. So you feel confident of even putting them in the banking industry, right?
I do. Now, banking has some specific regulations that limit what crimes can be acceptable to hire as a banking, but you're seeing even companies like the nation's largest bank, JP Morgan, hired over 2,000 people with criminal records last year. So it is possible, and when you start with this pool of 19 million Americans have a felony conviction, it's just an astounding number. You find people of all walks of life, of all talents, of all abilities, and so we should be looking at tapping that pool of talent.
Now, I said at the outset, and I don't think it's a secret that COVID has certainly, it is something that has wreaked havoc across the globe. Things that they're, in my lifetime, and sure in your lifetime, we've never seen anything like that. So that's one cause. But another thing, and you mentioned this, is the fact that the baby boomers, that's folks like myself in their mid-60s, late-60s, maybe early-70s, are retiring. Somebody's got to pick up pick up where they left off. So again, the impact of COVID, the fact that so many baby boomers are leaving the job market, there's going to be a lot of jobs, and there seems to be a gap there. So all the more reason, right, to utilize these people?
The ultimate message that I give to the business community is you have no choice but to consider every potential worker pool. The baby boomers were expected to retire over the next decade at a rate of 10,000 workers a day. I mean, just incredible number. But the reality is that the pandemic pulled that forward. And so this, what I used to call the looming labor shortage, instead of happening gradually, happened all of a sudden. And so businesses really, there's no choice. We stopped having enough babies 20 and 30 years ago to even replace our population. So the answer for the business community has to lie in, let's look at the people who've been sidelined, who are either out of the labor market or who are employed below their best ability.
I got to ask you this. You talked about financial institutions, J.P. Morgan being the largest in the nation, utilizing the talents of people who've had a somewhat shrouded background. But and I think most people would be very surprised, thinking, "Wow, really? I would think fast food places or convenience stores, gas stations, you know, menial tasks." But obviously, across the board, people are looking at these individuals. But let me ask you. Is there an industry in this country that still harbors a bias toward hiring anybody that's had any kind of a difficult background, especially when it comes to law?
You know, I think you see that certainly in finance does persist, and some of it is for the regulatory barriers. Healthcare, you hear that quite a bit. It's amazing. I've been in one city in the Midwest where. There are hospitals that have hired hundreds of people with criminal records. Johns Hopkins was one of the pioneers, by the way, in this area, and it did a large-scale study of how successful it was. And yet in the same city, in this Midwestern city, there's a very prominent hospital that not only won't hire from this pool, they won't let their vendors, the people who do the electrical work, you know, the HVAC work, won't let them bring someone with a felony conviction into the hospital. And the CEO of one of the companies I studied went to the CEO of this major hospital and he said, you know, my guys, I vet them. I'm responsible for them. You won't let me bring them in. So I can't hire give as many second chances as I'd like to. And yet, who do you think is walking the hallways of your hospital visiting your patients? Who do you think your patients are? So there's all this kind of crazy mismatch of ideals and reality. And I'd also say, you know, often people in major cultural institutions may be holding this back. Many colleges have set up college and prison programs, but how open are they in their hiring? Many museums talk about, you know, social good and social justice. How many of them are open in their hiring process? So I find there's a lot of, for lack of a better word, hypocrisy in some of these institutions as well.
Yeah, it's interesting that you said that because in spite of the fact that they, you know, may have certain programs where they allow them to come in as students, especially educational institutions, but you're right. Without even saying so, when the job requirement calls for a master's or a PhD, many of these people don't have that, and yet, you know, they could be viable employees. So, there certainly is.
Yeah, or think of all the infrastructure of, Worcester has some great colleges and universities,
right.
And I do not know their hiring practices, but think of the maintenance jobs, the administrative jobs. It's not just about the professors.
Right.
So there's marketing, all these things that are part of a large institution. Are they truly open to hiring people with records? And it's not just whether you are willing to consider it, is do you have a process that truly gives people the opportunity to compete with people who don't have a criminal record?
Right. As an economist, and you know this better than most people, this country was founded on free enterprise. This is what we do. This is what keeps us viable. We're unique, I think, in the global perspective. It's been small businesses and industry that carries this country. So the key word becomes, well, you know, if you hire these people, the question mark is, how will their productivity be? And everything we do in this country is measured on the level of productivity. And some people say, we don't need to hire them. We have, you know, today everything's automated. In fact, the next 10 years will be robots everywhere and computers will be able to run everything. We won't need any employees. That's a lot of malarkey, isn't it?
It is, and there is a degree to which automation can augment a limited labor source, but you then end up having to hire, yes, fewer people, but often they're the people now you need to do the technical skills to maintain or program robots, for instance, and those are even harder to find. So automation may be part of a solution in a tight labor market, but it's an incomplete one to be sure.
I want to just take a quick pause to remind folks that you're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. You can go to our website, wicn.org. I'm Al Vohner, and this is The Public Eye. My guest this week is a national commentator and author, Jeff Kozenik. And we're talking about, should businesses across the globe, especially here in this country, should we be looking at hiring individuals with criminal records, and is it good for business? Jeff, has there been, is there hard data that would support the fact that many of these people are gainfully employed, and they have turned their lives around, and yes, indeed, they are picking up the slack, and there's been no problems with them in terms of interacting with other employees, working with the public. Is there enough evidence to support that there's a good, you can make a good case that more and more organizations and companies should be looking at this?
There's very strong evidence, but frankly, a limited number of studies. One of the ironies here is that the companies that have been doing it often don't want to go public about it and don't want to talk about it. And so you tend to have a lack of data. But there have been two very large-scale published studies, a new one that's on its way, and they all point to the same thing. If you do this right, if you're selective in who you hire, and then you give the structure and support that people need, and this population tends to have needs that are associated with lives of deep poverty and lack of mentorship, not anything specific to the criminal record, but sometimes that too, you know, a need to meet with a parole officer on a regular basis during the workday. How do you give flex time for that? But the two studies are one done by Johns Hopkins Hospital System, you know, obviously a wonderful hospital system, one of the best in the country, and at the point they had hired 500 people in need of a second chance, people with criminal records. They did a study, and they found that, of course, with 500, not all of them worked out, but on average, they were more engaged and more loyal. Lower turnover means lower turnover costs and higher productivity for businesses. And of the terminations, right, 500 people, you're going to have some terminations. None of them were what they termed problematic. And then the other big study was actually done by a scholar at UMass Amherst. And she went in and used the Freedom of Information Act to pull out information about the military's felony waiver program. You can join the military if you have a felony, if you get a waiver. So there's a selectivity process there. And she found that those with felony convictions, felony waivers, achieved the rank of non-commissioned officer, you know, sergeant, faster than those without a felony. Mm. So good evidence. And then the staffing firm, Kelly Services, right. Some of your listeners may think of it as a Kelly girl, did a major study with Toyota in a plant in Kentucky and found similar successful results. So the evidence is there. Again, it's not all about trying to hire everyone in this population. It's treating it as a talent pool. Who's a good fit for your company? And are you, as an employer, giving them the tools to thrive? When you put those together, it works.
The your new book, which came out in April, Untapped Talent, focuses exclusively on this topic. But something recently came across my desk a few days ago here in Massachusetts. The question is, we have prisons and we have jails that are just they're busting because there's just so many inmates, and some. These are not violent criminals, not all of them anyway. One consultant said, well, one commentator said, rehabilitation. But in that same vein, let me ask you, because you've researched this so well, is there proof that if given gainful employment, that most do turn their lives around as opposed to turning them away? And that is what I'm asking. Is if you turn away these people, and they're turned away often enough, they just say, see, yeah, that's why I turned to crime, because no one's willing to listen to me, no one's willing to give me a chance. So has it been proven that more often than not, these individuals do turn their lives around, and if we don't take it serious, we'll have more problems in terms of crime?
You know, I think our history of recidivism and rearrest in this country points to how unsuccessful we've been in not offering opportunities. So we have rearrest rates of people coming out of state prisons, somewhere around 66% or 68%, excuse me, in the first 3 years historically. So that's a mark of failure. What we do know is that employment is necessary to rehabilitation, not always sufficient, but it's foundational to it. So if you find the people, I flip it around. I say, like, let's not talk about the general population. Let's talk about those who are ready, which is probably somewhere between, you know, a third are ready right away, a third can be made ready. And if you give them the jobs and if you give them the opportunity to thrive, then yes, you have very, very low recidivism rates. And you could see that in the track records of employers, of programs where recidivism rates tends to be in the single digits. So it does work, and it works for society. Even at the same time, it's fundamentally working for employers.
Like you and like many many Americans, people are still in, you know, there's no question this country has its faults. This country is dealing with issues as anybody, any nation on this planet is doing so. But I still love this country and I still believe in this country, as I'm sure you do. But people will say, you know, the United States can't get out of its own way. Ideals and things like this. That this may sound more to some people. This may sound like progressive politics. Oh yeah, you want to hire criminals? Are you kidding me? Do other countries have other countries jumped on the bandwagon long before us and have years, if not longer, of success with this kind of thinking and hiring people who have had criminal backgrounds?
They appear to. One of the problems is that this U.S. lack of data in the U.S. is a universal problem, and different companies measure recidivism rates differently. What I can say is that in the U.S., our problem of over-criminalization and incarceration is much greater than other countries. Now, it is fair to say we tend to be a more violent country, and that drives some of it. And the drug trade has driven a tremendous amount of additional issues as well. So we suffer from problems like the opioid epidemic in ways most other countries do not. That tends to drive some of this. So, the short answer is, I think most of us who've looked at this believe that Europe in particular has done much better at this. But it's hard to say for sure because those tend to be less violent societies, less driven by the drug trade. What is important to me is looking at our own experience in the United States within our own culture. And you see some states do better at this than others. Some industries do better than this than others. And all that points to the fact that we, as a society and as Americans, can do much better at living up to our aspiration to be the land of opportunity for all.
So there's still a lot of growing to do when it comes right down.
Absolutely. And it's important too. Businesses are, and to your point in your introduction, businesses are feeling this labor shortage, and they are becoming more open to this. But it's also important that they do it the right way. If they go about this thinking that this is going to be the employee of last resort, or they're scraping the bottom of the barrel, well, if you don't go looking for talent, you're not going to find it. You have to treat this as, or businesses have to treat this as, a true talent pool. How do I find the people who are a good fit? What do they need to thrive? That's when it truly works.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think that a lot of people would, whether they would tell you or I to our face is a different story, but sitting there across the desk doing an interview with someone that you know full well has had a criminal background, I think they're, in many cases, hiring managers or HR departments would certainly have some bias because that's what society has dictated to us. It's just, it is what it is. Going back to the idea of productivity that we talked about and how this country has been founded on primarily small businesses, and it to this day, I believe small businesses are still what keeps much of the economy going. Examples, we talked about hiring these people for existing companies, but many of them And you and I talked before broadcast. A perfect example is Dave's Killer Bread, which I became a fan of about a year ago. David Dahl from Oregon. This guy had a rap sheet longer than my arm. But him and his brother found the wherewithal to start a bakery, came up with a unique recipe for an all-natural bread. They have sold it, but for millions. So, you know, there's another aspect to what you're talking about, though, right? The idea that many, if they don't go to work for someone else, they're just as capable with hard work and determination of becoming entrepreneurs and starting businesses that hire other people, right?
Yeah, no, there are a number of very prominent nonprofits that try to drive entrepreneurship. And even if, you know, people from these backgrounds do struggle with access to capital and not having much of a social network, some of the things that many successful entrepreneurs do have, just the fact that they look to become entrepreneurs, to go through that training, teaches them a lot about being a better employee, how to think like a business owner. And so those are very attractive attributes. This is a group that, by and large, knows how to navigate risk, knows how to hustle, and I mean that in the positive sense of the word, of course, and, you know, can be very, very resilient. When employers understand all the obstacles that people have to face when they come out of prison. You know, you get $100 gate money and a bus ticket, you know, at best. And you have to reclaim your IDs, find places to live. You may not have known anything about computers going in. You might not have had a GED or a high school diploma. All these things that people have to overcome just to get to a point where they can be a viable applicant for a job, that actually becomes a testament to determination and really a mark of character.
In the final few moments that we have, I got to ask you this, because I think this, and I think you alluded to this early on when we talked about biases. At the end of the day, you feel very strongly that second chance hiring is not a charity. It's business. You know, don't look at these people as you said earlier. This person will be just temporary to get me over the hump until things settle down and we can get, you know, COVID is completely eradicated and we can get employees back in here. That would be very difficult, though, would it not, David, for most people from coast to coast to overcome the idea that this is not charity. This is business. Hire them as you would anyone else.
Well, it is a matter of getting used to it. I mean, I'm of an age where I remember all sorts of prejudices that were commonplace against, you know, people of different ethnic origins and things like that. And what you learn as an adult is you get the experience with people from these backgrounds and you say, oh, this is okay. They're just like me. And I think that's what it's going to take is some of the cultural acclimation to people with criminal backgrounds just being people like us. And the reality is, and something I really do want to stress to your listeners, is the usual mark of someone who goes into prison for the first time is they're a young male who did something stupid. Not nefarious criminals, just people caught up in something dumb, and maybe it led to being involved in the drug trade. Maybe it involved a crime of violence, even though the person might not be a fundamentally violent person even then, and certainly not now with time passing. So all of these things are really marks of youth very commonly, and people grow out of that, and they can become different people. So it does take a societal shift to not make a blanket condemnation of people who made mistakes in the past. And I think we'll get there, but it does take time. It takes experience of this. And fortunately, there have been pioneering for-profit business leaders who've taken this on and are continuing to grow this practice. And I've spoken to them throughout the pandemic, the ones I've studied and feature in my book. And they all said, I wouldn't change my practices. This has been transformational in positive ways for my company. And so the fact that it works, I'm a pragmatist. I promote this because it works, not out of wishful thinking, but out of actual real life experience.
Yeah, that's not something that's just theory. It's actually, as you said, in motion, and it's working as we speak. And going back to something that you said earlier, I think we all know somebody or have a friend of a friend who has a maybe a family member or someone else who, as you said, crossed the line, maybe weren't young and inexperienced, weren't thinking properly. And
didn't have parental support.
Right.
Very often you think about, I certainly have not led a blameless life, but I also would have had parental resources, legal sophistication, had I overstepped the line and been caught, because those are the two components. Very often people who are poor and unsophisticated, don't have stable families, don't have the same outcomes because they don't have the same protections wrapped
right.
around them.
Very important, very important. And that's something that's been, we've been trying to drive home in this country for years, and hopefully people get it, but we'll have to see. Real quick, Jeff, I know the book Untapped Talent was released, so that's widely in public, that's widely in bookstores across the nation. But if people want to just pose questions to you directly or just get more information about the research and the work that you're doing on this topic, can they do that directly? Can they reach you?
Absolutely. Best way is to go to my website, www.jeffkorzenik.com. I'm the only Jeff Korzenik on the planet. So if you can get that, the spelling K-O-R-Z-E-N-I-K, if you can get the spelling of my last name, the closer you'll find me. There's a contact form on there. I do invite people. I did put a little bit of information on Twitter. You can follow me there. Again, Jeff Korzenik, I'm the only one, so that's easy. As well as for business leaders who are interested in hearing more about this, and as well as other takes on the economy, I tend to be a heavy user of LinkedIn. And can be found there as well.
Great, great. And as I said at the outset, Jeff's book, where he's put all his energy in the last few years, is into Untapped Talent, how second chance hiring works for your business and the community, especially in view of the COVID pandemic that has really knocked economies across the globe and really made it challenging for trying to find good help. And this is, for the most part, an untapped market and something that many businesses should take a hard look at. If you have any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly give us a call here at the studios at WICN. Our main number is 508-752-0700. You can pose any comments, questions, or feedback to me directly. I certainly welcome that. That's Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A, at WICN.org. For the Public Eye, this is Al Vona.